Hello, and welcome to Nakubo in Brief, a podcast from the National Association of College and University Business Officers. On this series, we explore the opportunities and challenges facing the higher education business office. And on this episode, we're going to take a look at the recent rollout of the Free Application for Federal Student Aid, or the FAFSA. I think many would describe it as challenging, some frustrating, and that's for students, families, and schools. So what are the challenges students are facing? What are schools doing to make this a little better? And what's going on at the Department of Education? So many questions. And who better to help us navigate all this than Justin Dreger, the president and CEO of NASFA, the National Association of Student Financial Aid Administrators. Justin, so glad you're able to be back for another podcast episode with us.
Glad to be here. Thanks for having me, Brian.
Wonderful. And again, you're the head of NASFA,
right?
One of our great Higher Education Association friends. So I was just wondering, maybe Justin, just a real quick reminder for some of our listeners about what NASFA is and what you and your team do.
We have a great team at NASFA. NASFA is the Nakubo, but for financial aid administrators. So we represent about 3,000 colleges and university financial aid offices. NASFA members serve 9 out of 10 students enrolled in post-secondary education today. So very broad membership, everything from public to privates, to career schools, all across the board, and everything student and federal student aid focused.
All right. So then let's level set here. We're here to talk about the rollout of the FAFSA.
Right.
And again, some of the challenges that students, families, and higher education institutions have been facing. Just again, background here. I do like to level set. Just maybe just a little background on the FAFSA itself. What is it exactly, and why is it so darn important?
Yeah, this is the gateway form. You complete this form, and this is the form that is the gateway to, for millions of students and families, the gateway to billions of dollars in federal student aid. So everything from federal Pell Grants to work study to even federal student loans. And then even at the institutional level or private scholarship providers, anything that has to do with need-based aid, or even at the federal level, non-need-based aid starts with the FAFSA.
So obviously important, and we're hearing about challenges. And this is part of a bigger conversation, though, right? So I'm kind of, again, level setting, going a little bit back in time, if you will. But why did all of this change start, and where are we now in this process? Because this is, I mean, right, this is a multi-year kind of thing, but we're right now with the FAFSA itself. This is kind of the here and now, but this is a bigger conversation and a bigger project that we're talking about, right?
Yeah, this year is very challenging, and I know we'll spend some time on this, but if we back up a little bit, the FAFSA, because it's this gateway we talked about, it's really sort of always trying to deal with this tension that exists. The tension is trying to make this form be able to capture what is needed by the federal government, institutions, states, and even private scholarship providers to capture enough information that we can equitably distribute a limited amount of financial aid. So you can imagine with all of these players, they all want to capture something different. And at the same time, not be so complicated and capture so much data that it wards off the very students and families that we most need to complete the form. So there's the tension. We want to capture enough information that we can equitably distinguish who is financially needy and not have states and institutions and the federal government all using separate applications, because that just makes the process that much more complicated,
right,
for students. And at the same time, make it simple. And therein lies all this complexity. So a couple of years ago, Congress passed a series of bills, two bills in particular, that made all of this, or was supposed to make all of this, easier for families. One bill allows families to largely just rely on the IRS.
Okay.
So import all of their information directly from the IRS into their FAFSA. The second bill then eliminated a whole bunch of questions that really just didn't apply to most students and families, and helped make it easier by saying, if you already qualify for other federal means-tested benefits, then we're not going to ask you a bunch of questions. Like, let's stop. This is all under the premise of, like, let's stop having poor people prove to multiple federal and state agencies that they are poor. Mm. These are things that most people agree with. So all of that ultimately resulted in a new federal formula and a new federal form. And for the last 2.5 years, the federal government has been working, the Department of Education in particular, has been working on this form. Voila, that's where we are this year. And the rollout has been rough.
Rough. Maybe you can tell us just a little bit about what has been rough. I know we don't have hours and hours, and I know that's probably a challenge. But just what are the hiccups? What are the challenges here for these students?
Yeah, if we were to just hit the highlights, normally the FAFSA comes out in October of every year. Students start filling it out, and the financial aid offices across the country start collecting that data almost immediately. Then when we get into the winter months around January, February-ish, maybe March, schools start sending out aid offers. This is how much you qualify for in federal, state, and institutional aid. And then in a traditional school setting, the students then make a decision based on those aid offers of where they'll attend, and they lock in their decision by May 1. That's a traditional year. This year, the Department of Education announced that the FAFSA would not be available until December. It actually turned out to be December 30th.
Still December?
Well, these are the games. These are the games we play.
Yeah,
right.
Sorry, I'm not trying to be.
No, I mean, in retrospect, these are the games we play. It was December, but it was December 30th. It was called a soft launch, and soft it was because it was available for like an hour, and then a few hours, and eventually it was available 24/7. But if you were a college access organization trying to hold like a FAFSA night, it was very frustrating. And so it was available intermittently through a lot of the first part of January. Schools were supposed to receive student information by the end of January. They were notified at the end of January that it actually wouldn't be available till mid-March. Hmm. Which tells you is sort of a big red flag that the back end of all of this wasn't actually fully built. So when I say it's been rough, it has been rough because students have been filling out the FAFSA. 5.5 million of them have been filling out a FAFSA for the last 3 months, and none of them have had that information actually given to schools. And now here we are, Brian, we're recording this on March 19th. Yeah. And schools have now just started to receive trickles of FAFSA information. So this is now just starting to roll, and it'll roll over the next couple weeks. And knock on wood, we still have several hiccups that we have to overcome, but now hopefully schools will start to be able to do something with these records and turn out aid offers in the month of April.
That's what I was going to say. So again, just for our listeners' benefit, students complete the form and then the department sends that information to schools. What kind of happens next for those?
Yeah, well, in a normal year, again, schools would be receiving these almost in real time. It usually takes 2 to 3 days to turn over. But now they're receiving just batches of information. And it's not like, you know, these have all been building up behind sort of a dam. And so now the department is sort of opening the dam so that these institutional student records, information records, or ICERs are flowing out to schools, but they're flowing out in these very small batches, and then slowly the department will ramp up those batches. But these batches will take a few weeks to flow out. The school will need a critical mass of those batches before they can do their modeling, build out their aid offers, and get those to students. So it's not like they can just start sending out aid offers in the trickles that they are coming in.
Right.
So it'll take weeks for schools to actually turn this around to students. And I wish that the timing could be firmer, but it'll depend on a school by school basis, and it'll depend on how quickly each school receives that critical mass of information from the department.
Okay. Maybe, I'm going to say wrongly, some people might say, oh, this is a college financial aid office problem, but it's bigger than that. There are a lot of you know, offices and operations that are tied to this process. Maybe go just a little deeper kind of on the kind of downstream impacts there.
This will impact everything from the institution's deposits, like when you can expect students to realistically lock in their decision. I mean, if the number one, which we've known for a long time, the number one barrier to enrolling in college is affordability, the number one thing they're waiting for then is how am I going to afford college? And that's their aid offer. And so for a lot of students, if they don't get an aid offer until, this is optimistic at this point, mid-April, more realistic is probably late April, can we realistically expect students to lock in a decision by May 1? And I think the answer to that for most families who are depending on financial aid is no. So I know various entities, including our partners at the American Council on Education, are trying to keep track of which schools have pushed their enrollment deadlines past May 1. And I'm not here to judge any individual institution because I know they have their own bills to pay and some schools are operating on very razor thin margins here. And institutions' financials are all over the map. All I'm saying is that this will impact everything. The downstream impacts are everything from when you can expect deposits, when you can expect schools and or students and families to lock in their actual enrollment decisions. This will impact whether some students and families just say, bag it, I'm not going to school this year.
Yeah.
This will impact whether they go to a four-year or two-year school. And nothing wrong with going to a two-year school. That's not my implication. That's not what I'm implying. I'm solely implying that really, we're not going to know until we look backwards really what all of the impacts of this were. I guess there's one other thing I might mention, Brian, is, I gave you, we sort of talked about at a high level what's going on. The other thing that we don't know right now is with all these ICERs coming out, there's another aspect of this, which is the ICERs are coming out, but we have no idea how many of these because they're all coming at once, right? We've crammed months of work into roughly, 3 to 4 weeks. Mm. We don't know how many of these ICERs will be rejected, how many are valid. Rejected means like they didn't actually calculate a financial aid number, student aid index number that the school needs to calculate financial aid. Like schools will have to like work these ICERs, these FAFSA applicant data, work with students, make corrections. And right now that functionality doesn't even exist. So we are not over all the humps yet. So aid offices are going to need your patience. They're going to need space. They might need some of your bandwidth. I just think we are starting to see some daylight, but that daylight won't be spread equally across all students.
What else are schools doing to make this as easy as possible for these students and kind of getting through this process? You know, are there good stories to share here?
Well, the good stories, I think, will be coming. Let's wait on them. Here's some of the promise. Okay. Right now it's hard to see the good stories, but the good story of all of this is what's yet to come. This new formula and form is easier for students and families to fill out. I myself have sat down with families who are completing this FAFSA and it is easier. For most, the large majority, vast majority of families, this is an easier form. And I can say that unequivocally. I sat down with a student, completed the FAFSA with them. It took less than 10 minutes. And it was so easy that I actually went backwards to make sure, like, is that it?
Did I miss something?
And I know the form. I knew the new questions and I still went backwards to say, did we miss anything? It was that easy. For a lot of students, families, much easier. The other part of this formula, by design, by Congress, it will result in more Pell recipients. It is a more generous formula. More middle-income families will qualify for Pell, and more students will qualify for full Pell. So the promise of this is real. The rollout has been extremely rough, and there is promise on the other side, but it's been a harrowing journey to get through this.
What is the Department of Education doing here to help with you and your members and our members at schools and students and families? What are we seeing anything from the Department of Education?
It's been a bit of a tough dance because to date, at least through the month of January, I would say that there's been some real trust issues with our colleagues at the department. You know, the very day that schools are expecting to receive like FAFSA applicant data, the department then announces they won't get it for another 2 months. That doesn't do a lot to build trust. But the department has heard that message. They are trying to be a lot more communicative with schools. The department is also struggling. They're struggling with their contractor. We have career staff that I think are struggling under the weight of all of this, just the same as career people on campus are. And they have put together a coalition that NASFA is a part of to try to help severely under-resourced institutions get up to speed. They're putting together quick step guides to help schools figure out how to connect better to the Department of Education's technical specifications so they can download these ICERs, at least FAFSA student records. I will just say that the goodwill, I think, has largely been spent. If I'm being honest, I think the goodwill has largely been spent on the financial aid side. And I'm just leveling with you here. It's been a tough journey. So we're just muddling through with our federal colleagues at this point.
I don't doubt it at all. It sounds like when you describe, you know, the amount of work that's going to have to happen here, and I guess that kind of leads to my final question, Justin. You know, what does come next? And you kind of talked to this a little bit, but what do the next several months look like? And dare I say, and maybe it's a little too bold of me to ask, you know, what about, you know, subsequent terms? You know, what does this look like in 2025, you know, down the road, subsequent semesters? I mean, like you said, ultimately, right, this is going to be beneficial to students enrolling at campuses across the country. But my goodness, what do you see kind of here across the next few months?
In the immediate term, we will continue to face pretty significant frustrations with this rollout. So this is by no means, we have not seen the summit yet. In a very technical sense, we need more information out of the Department of Education. FAFSA filing is behind where it was year over year with high school seniors. And just in general, FAFSA filing is behind. So we need a lot more people to get up to speed and file their FAFSAs. Schools still need their ICER records. We need corrections and functionality that schools still don't have. But on the other side of all of that, I hope the promise will hold true for next year. I don't think it's off the table that there are additional delays, but I sincerely hope next year doesn't even come close to the frustrations we're feeling this year. There may be still additional delays. I'm in no position to call what next year looks like, but I hope it won't even come close to touching what this year has been.
Well, fingers crossed for you, your members, and the students and families that they're working through all of this with.
Yeah, and I appreciate that, Brian. And a big thank you to you and Liz, Kara, and the team at Nakubo. You all have been great partners through all of this and staying in touch with us, partnering with us on some of our asks from the Department of Education, and just in general, staying in touch and helping us to communicate back to our respective campus partners.
You're very welcome. Thank you, Justin. And really, that's kind of all the time we have. And maybe we can touch base down the road and see where things go with this. But again, wanted to thank you for being here and sharing your thoughts on this with us. This has been a really great conversation. It's been really informative.
Thank you.
And as always, thank you to all of our listeners. We hope you tell a friend or a colleague about this podcast so that they and you can both join us on the next episode of Nakubo in Brief. Take care, everyone.